Sarah, can you stand there? And we can afford to see that one.
Yes,
thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us today here at Harry Potter the Exhibition for this incredible DVD launch as well. And as you can see, we've got just a spectacular, spectacular panel here for you to speak with this morning. My name is Eddie Newquist. I'm with GES and one of the creators of the exhibition. So very, very happy that you're here, and thank you for traveling all this way. You've all got name tags in front of you, but I'll go down just briefly and introduce, and then we'll open it up for questions. I'll act a little bit as a moderator today. So we're thrilled to have Clemence Posey here from the film series, as well as Donald Green. Lisa, sorry, Green. I told you the lines were bright, sorry. James and Oliver Phelps, of course. Bonnie Wright, Mark Williams, Michael Gambon, and of course, David Heyman. And so with that, we will open it up for questions. So just, you know, there's plenty of time, I think, to answer your questions and to call you each out. So we'll just go one at a time.
Lucky at the very, very best, it could be chitchy bang bang. But so for me, it's the end. Sometimes on each day, we filmed with a clapperboard. think it was. And for me, it's both frankly very sad because we have become over this period a family. New members come in and the family grows. So it's really sad. We aren't coming back and doing this again. At the same time, I have to say, after 14 years, I'm really excited to be doing something else and looking forward to new adventures. I just say that I think Michael Gambon and Mark Williams are also the generation that grew up with it.
Shows how many generations it's crossed and how many cultures, you know, how many it's been, I don't know how many languages it's been translated into, but that's amazing that it's kind of literally come to
everywhere. One of the fascinating things for me about the whole series is that the books are existing in parallel with the films. Now it's taken over. And children have been very, very clever and mature in understanding the books and the films. And sometimes the character, I mean, Mr. Weasley is different. In some ways, in the books than he is in the films. And Joe has never kind of the two things are not leached into each other, and I think children have really understood that, and that's been a part of the success of all this, is that the books are about reading and that internal world that you can then see in the film and decide whether you had such a laugh, and it's been like that through the whole 10 years, and we're very lucky to be such a cool group of people. I think other members of the cast are maybe a bit jealous that we get to just have this.
I think my wife and I
would agree with that.
It's been really, you don't want to sort of talk about family and stuff, but we spent a lot of time together. So much fun. I mean, it's so funny when they were little, like when Bonnie arrived, she's bouncing on the floor, she was like, as a sort of acting parent, as it were, as a pretend parent, it's been a lot of fun.
I think also the whole film in general, being obviously from a child with an orphan perspective, it's obviously the only real family unit that the whole film is kind of balanced on.
Well, yeah, after all, the only father left alive. Especially the first day of filming, I was very nervous, to say the least. So to have my brother there was quite nice, at least talk to somebody about it. And then it's just grown more and more from that, really. And it's nice to be able to share this with a family member as well. And I'm sure that it all stems there.
Yeah, it was lovely. I mean, everyone was so well. I worked in just for that film. Extra fun. I like it's such an amazing place to be. The sets are incredible. Everybody's really, really nice. And then to be able to share that with a family member, I would say, is great. I think when I was his dad in the film was also really sweet. So it was great. Thanks for asking the question.
Sets, but it was amazing to me coming on the set of the Great Hall and realizing that the floor was actually stone, that it was stone flags. Because normally you're
And so he built the York, he brought down the Yorkstone that was there for seven films. So he was absolutely right. So it was a cost saving as well as an aesthetic and environmental.
I think for when the kids were young, the heavy furniture and the floor and stuff, it very really, you know, really rooted.
I think that's pretty well the Yorkstone. The Yorkstone is the way you want to meet
every flower.
You'll see, and we're not here to talk about the exhibit yet, but one of the things you'll see in the exhibit, one of the things that I love about what Stuart has done is just the attention to detail. And you get a sense of it when you watch the films, but what is, I think we're all aware of, is how much more detail there is than you see in the films. When you go into the Griffin Hall common room, there are notice boards with class, you know, schedules, with meeting groups, with little, you know, jokes on them. There are, you know, when you out here in the exhibition, one of the things I like is this this thing that Lockhart made had his students do, which were questions about Lockhart. So he made his students, you know, answer questions about himself, and that is that. Those are things you never see Quidditch programs, you never see really in the film, but the detail is there, and I think, I mean, the actors should talk about it, but it really makes, I think, the whole world feel more real and more substantial, so it's not just green screen.
Starts with the Quidditch World Cup and the actual programs, you could read each page of the program. And there was actually, I didn't make much sense, but you could like see it. There was a huge time for that tables of when the matches were and who they were when and what. And stuff like that you wouldn't see on camera unless you turned around and held it up. So it was, that's going to a character perspective, it's really useful.
And all Robbie's doing next to it.
Take all these things for granted when they're there. Like if we're not on the uniforms and everything, when you first put it on, it's kind of, well, this is cool. But then after 10 years later, you're kind of, you're used to it. But then to see like people, like I went in Toronto for the exhibit there, actually, everyone was so keen to go and see Oliver and Fred and George's tailored suits that we had done and their wands and everything. And I think the wands especially, we just take them for granted because we've got them all the time when we're shooting. So I think that it's amazing to see everyone's fascination in these things that we've been surrounded with for so long.
Well, after we finish, there was a stuttering thing where people were wrapped, and then you'd see people later, and that's why Ellen Bonham Carter in London. And she said, oh, Steve, I really miss you. She said, where's my wand?
Step closer for children's imaginations to really be put, you know, in front of them. I think that is really exciting, that kind of idea of, you know, the same idea obviously why the theme park was created, the same for here, that it kind of is a travelling exhibition, so it doesn't, you know, hopefully comes to as many children, you know, as local as you can get, the better. And I think also just to realise how real it all actually is. I think sometimes, you know, that sense of, that suspension of, you know, disbelief sometimes when you watch films, you don't know how kind of it's hard to really connect when something's, you know, with the screen in front of it. But I think now for all the visitors that come here, it's, you know, that is what we wore, and, you know, hopefully they'll stay as artifacts for, you know, a long time.
We can see the Hogwarts really did exist.
Standby props, who was a lifer. He was in charge of collecting all the stuff. You know, people had to give their wands back and the Quidditch programs and stuff like that. And everything was under lock and key. And Gary had to do that for 11 years. He's been to you in the 80s, not a lot of time. It
was me that last 3 days of film, you'd come off set with a wand, and Gary would just be there, like.
Set and when we were on set and when we were starting to collect, and
some of the artifacts and started meeting with the department heads, the only place that was large enough for us to set out all the things that we had chosen to look at was the Great Hall. So we filled the Great Hall with all the things you see in the exhibition to make sure we inventoried them correctly and tagged them correctly. So that was very, very special to have all the department heads contribute and really go through the collections of, you know, for 10 years and really try to find the most amazing things that people have an emotional connection to.
Well, what sort of proportion of stuff? I mean, this is only a tiny proportion, isn't it?
I mean, it really is a tiny proportion. You guys have saved and collected a lot of stuff. So it's really a very small percentage. But still over 14,000 square feet of just costumes and props and set dressings.
14,000 square feet?
Yes.
You need a bigger attic.
I spent 10 years of my life at the Royal Shakespeare Company in the National Theatre in the old day. So I'm so used to wearing wigs and pants and all that stuff. I just walk straight and straight in. I'm not very used to it. You're back to the kitchen to be, you know, just going to move around with the luck of that, luck of that. It takes away the food. I'm not there and I'm just waiting for the cover of it. I would feed chips into the beer to do it in the meantime.
Julie having to deal with the death of her son. And I think both of us found that a bit tricky over because we spent quite a lot of time in and around that area for about 2 days, and that was a bit kind of unpleasant.
Sequence in part one when he gets his ear knocked off and everything. That was really cool. So they even had a scratch film in the films. And like all the creature effects design, the company team did a great job on that. So to be able to film that was quite special.
I think also what was fun was the battle which you'll see in the second part was a real moment to literally bring everyone back that we had in a lot of films. It was kind of a reuniting with everyone. And I think, although it was upsetting to see the whole of Hogwarts kind of explode and crumble down, there was a real kind of also sort of cathartic feeling of it because it was that kind of celebration of this has been an amazing set, yet we're kind of, you know, it's kind of battling out to kind of conquer evil. So I think it was a very exciting and perfect way to sort of really go out with a bang for the end of our films.
I didn't know I was going to be in a movie still. The first thing I did was like I called my dad and I was like, Dad, you're dead to page 20.
Yeah, that's the thing. Because it's the same thing. I got in pretty late, so I read the fourth book actually without knowing at all that I would be involved in it. And then everyone just calls you when the books are out. Everyone calls you. You're not in that one. Well, you were getting married. You're like, it's really. Waiting to find out what's the, and everyone finds out before you because they all queue up to get the book at midnight.
It was sort of an amazing thing that we're making the films concurrently with books, and so we didn't. You know, Hogwarts, for example, has changed over the course of the films because as we discovered what we had to do, and so Stuart's flights of fancy sort of led to it being adapted, and he was always trying to perfect it. But we were making things, and we were making films, and we didn't know what was happening. So you may have heard this, but on the fifth film, the seventh wasn't already out when we were writing, developing the script. We left creature.
to Jo, because Jo reads all the scripts, and she called me and said, David, you know, you might want to put him back in. So he's got a role to play. He's got a role to play later on. I said, okay.
Experience as well as a great experience for any actor anyway, so we were learning all just even something like how film is put in the camera and loaded and all these different terms and how hair dye works.
And also I think because we're playing these characters at such an age where you're starting to find out who you are as a person yourself, that maybe that's seeped into my personality as well, like the jerky side of characteristics. Like most of my mum's and dad's probably, but yeah, we've got a lot.
I think also, I think, well, for me, I was always very interested in everything that was going on, not only in the sort of acting type of things. I was quite a curious person, so I always was looking around all different departments. And in terms of, you know, the next step in our career and setting us up, it could be the most amazing foundation and the most amazing learning experience we could have ever asked for in terms of we're never going to have something as big as this.
About all of you is that you did all work incredibly hard. I mean, it's been an extraordinary education, but it was something that none of you ever shirked, or there was never any sense that you weren't 100% committed to it. And that so the older actors has been, some of us are older than others, of course, has been a really positive and enlightening thing as well. They've maximum respect to the kids, as they were called. Clearly not anymore. Is that they've taught us a lesson in some ways as well.
Actually, I'd just comment on the inverse, which is to the other side, which is one of the things I'm really proud of and love about the experience of working on these films is it's a place with great ambition but no ego. So everybody's ambitious to make the films as good as they can be, but it's an ego-free environment. And so one of the things that I really treasured was the fact that the old people. I'm sitting to my left. Michael again. The old guys, the more experienced actors were incredibly generous with the younger actors, that they were never impatient. Even if they may have felt impatient, they were never impatient. They were always there to share stories and to share experiences and were integral in creating an environment which was as comfortable and safe as it was. So, the films wouldn't have been what they were without these fantastic adult actors who really are. Michael Gambon, Mark Williams, Alan Rickman, Maggie Smith, Jim Broadbent, and Elder Thornton, who go on, Gary Oldman. And friends become friends.
Yeah, I think for us it's been a massive and amazing sort of experience. And like I was saying, the foundation for us, I don't think we could have asked for any better environment to be in terms of learning from others. And I think that's something I've also really picked up this film. The idea of just watching and listening to people, you can gain so much from that. It's been amazing.
I think one thing is a lot of people, especially the young cast and some of the younger crew, this was the first film they ever worked on. And so some of them are going on to other films now and realize that it's not, I mean, it really isn't always like this.
Robbie from Transcendence was kind of like down the Rolls Royce to your first ever car. It's going pretty hard to make this.
Actually seen the film. I can say that it is at this, it's a action adventure, but time is taken for, you know, what I love most about these films is the characters and the human elements, and time is taken for that. And for those of you who read the book, you know it's an unconventional narrative when you go into memories and into, you know, other places and King's Cross, in a non-naturalistic way. So it is an unconventional Hollywood blockbuster, but it's never going to be Hollywood. It's a blockbuster, but well, it is a very British film. You know, it just reeks of England, of Britain, of Scotland, rather. It really does. So I don't think it's conventional in any way. Yeah, it didn't affect at all because we shot it in 2D and we're doing a post-conversion.
Cool for that. And it's only shot 3D.
Starting on that film, 3/4 in the first film, and it was freezing winter. And I remember actually being, I think when you're that age, every month counts for your age. And I remember being the age of 9/3 on platform 9/3. And I remember just being absolutely freezing from there up to when I was touching. watching Hot Water Bottles between every take, and I just didn't know what any word meant. You know, action, which people like think and kind of know what that is, but you know, cut and rolling and speed and all those words. I was just like, what is going on? So confused. And for me, in the obviously the film that you have yet to see, obviously we go background of that cycle, and we go, you know, we jump forward in time, and we have Lily Potter, who's the youngest of the Potter family, and she was the same age as me when we were when I started, and we were on platform 9 3/4, so it was very surreal going around in that whole cycle that I started at that age and she started at that age, yet I was meant to be playing her mother, and it was very bizarre.
I had a wizard hat, a woolen three-piece suit, and a cloak. And the dog had to cry out and go, "Morning, Weasley!" And I was the sweat literally running down my back. That's what I was. Great fun. I was just petrified when I came in to take over. I can't understand the experience now. I just fight your way through it and be brave for a week, too. I think terrified. I'd never be terrified of the rain. That real fear.
Just look, I just sat there, but just looking at everybody, looking around, thinking, oh my God.
The answer is very funny.
They are, and then you get nearer and nearer, you think, I'm going to speak to me. I'm going to talk.
Mr. Weasley reporting. It was the first time we had that whole family unit.
One last question, Gary, please. If you could just bring around to the fans one more time. So obviously the exhibition's built for fans, the film series, the theme park's all been built for fans, but the internet alone, I mean, the blogosphere is insane with Harry Potter fans. Is there something sort of in the Harry Potter fan universe that's been a pleasant surprise, like college kids playing intramural footage, or something like that? Is there something that's sort of hot out there? Well, that's a pretty good idea. And we were there with the whole myself and Fields and Tom Felton was there. And there was this little lad who could only be about 8 or 9, and he was really like happy, and I was talking to him myself, and he saw Tom, and Tom came, I left this kid you learn on me. Tom said, "Oh, how's it going, this boy?"
Well, I want to thank everybody for being here today. Certainly I want to thank our panel, including Mr. Gleason. So thank you.
I was referred to as David Hyman, and the reason for that, and the bath time.